Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Another brand new broadcast week begins here at the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home and has been for 11 years. More than, really. The Horn was born in a terrestrial broadcasting era. But this, today, right now, is our 11th anniversary of operating solely upon the interweb tubes. Yes. 11 years. It all started October the 24th, 2005, after a brief hiatus from the air, from the terrestrial air. Boss Man Wayne got the studio put together, and we fired this thing up on October the 24th, 2005. Yo, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And it is the it's the anniversary, the birthday, if you will, of a progressive broadcast effort that has outlasted a lot of others that were much better, much more wealthily funded, and had much greater access to the things that make broadcasting possible. But we're here. They're not. Yeah. And with any luck at all, cross your fingers, knock wood, don't walk under any ladders or break any mirrors, we'll be here for another year. And hopefully even longer than that. But I'm kind of proud of that. I've been sort of reflecting on it all day and reflecting on all the people who have been involved with this and all the people who have been heard here and all of the people who have had a voice here and all the notes I've gotten over the years. I don't delete, but I don't folder them or anything either, but for some reason or another, there is something about what we have built here is special and has been for over a decade now. I think about it and, golly, let's see. Doodle was 8. Ferg was 9. Margie was 11. And our eldest, Laura, was 16 years old when this started. Well, now our eldest has 3 of her own and is in her late 20s. Margie's an adult and working. Ferg is an adult and trying to work when he can manage not to hurt himself in freak accidents. And Doodle's an adult and working and has left West Virginia, flew the nest in a big way. And, yeah. 3 beautiful grandkids. I'm 11 years older. The hair's whiter and lesser. Agnes is miraculously still here. And so too, there are people who have been listening to this program since its inception. And I find that all extremely humbling and inspiring. Because you're the ones who make this all happen. You're the ones who fund the Horn. You're the ones who share your precious, finite time enjoying participating in the ongoing conversation in whatever way you choose, calling, emailing, tweeting, Facebooking, and sometimes, you know, just sitting there at home or wherever you are, in the car now. See, that it was really amazing. The possibilities were amazing when we started this, that someday you might be able to listen to internet radio in your car. Do it all the time now, don't you? Hell, they're building internet radio into the cars now. Yeah, I'm still a little behind the curve on that. I plug up a thing to a thing that goes into another thing and listen to, right. Yep, Brother Deacon Asa, you're right. Wow, you got 4 kids and 3 grandkids? You reproductive freak, you. That's me, Bob Kincaid, reproductive freak. How long ago was that? But, yeah, and, you know, someday there'll be a highlight reel. Not tonight. Because unlike other people, you know, we don't charge for access to what's gone before. It's all there for you to listen to whenever you wish, however you wish, if you wish. That's why I'm not playing any old clips or anything tonight, because we've only got 3 hours a night. Thank you, Jim. Jim says, happy birthday from your first caller. Absolutely. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very kindly. No, we've only got 3 hours a night to march through the madness that is our world on a daily basis. To laugh, to carry on, to ridicule, yes, to goon on and goof on, and sometimes achieve a bit of righteous indignation over. So, you want clips? The whole archives are there. Even the deep archives. You know, so enjoy. This is, of course, wow. Sparky just told me 2,293 people have visited the chat room over the years. That's a lot of different folks. And you're welcome to be number 2,294. Just head on over to headonradionetwork.com and click on chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password. And zounds, you'll be there. I mean, that's pretty amazing when you think of it as a function of the of all the people, because a lot of folks listen and don't do the chat room. But that's amazing. Thank you for the stat, Sparky. The chat room is, of course, moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, even though a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space in the cool and rainy climate of Northern California this evening. Yeah, you'll see him in the chat room just as Sparky. You'll also be greeted by Anatole, Doctor Who, Hoghead, Jug-a-Punch, Laborman, Ralps, Steve from Georgia Stan, V.T. Blom, and Will in Chicago. So, welcome one. You will be welcomed by one and all to that madcap, merry, zany, the wacky multimedia real-time extravaganza. Hop right in. The conversation, as they say, is fine. But yes, we are a listener-supported operation. We do nothing. This does not exist without you. Big thanks go out to John and Franklin over the weekend. Thank you very kindly for making it possible for us to start the week good. It takes a lot of stress off the idea of, you know, birthday night. Thank you very, very much indeed. So, you know, we try to raise, and of course, the month of October will end a week from tonight, Halloween night, October the 31st is a Monday, and we are on track to beat the Swede for our 10th consecutive month, which is a very, very big deal indeed, and start the penultimate month of Swede beating for 2016. Last I checked, our buddy Scott and the lovely Brigitte had left Spain and were wending their electric way, slowpoke road tripping, up through France. So, happy. I hope the travels are happy. I've been following Scott and Brigitte's travels via their blog there at slowpokeroadtrip.com. Yeah, I know. It strips right off the tongue, doesn't it? So, if you would like to be part of helping keep the horn going, I remember way back in the day, you know, we went on the air when Air America was still a going concern. And was hemorrhaging something like $84,000 a day. And at that point in time, we were producing something just like 3 hours short of as much progressive programming as Air America was, and we're doing it with, you know, pennies. So there's never been a time when we've been absolutely just flush. And this, we're not now. Everything that comes in goes out, paying bills. And so if you would like to be part of helping to keep it all going, well, there's a contribute tab, you know that, at headonradionetwork.com. And you can jump in on the front end of year number 12. Because this is the beginning of year number 12 of internet-only broadcasting. We went on the air on February the 4th, 2004, maybe February the 2nd. No, it wasn't Groundhog Night. Couldn't possibly be. That would just work out too deliciously, ironically. But this is year number 12. We're beginning this evening of internet broadcasting. Run on over to headonradionetwork.com. Click on Contribute. We're always looking for new subscribers. Thank you, Richard. We have only one subscriber here on the 24th of the month, so I'm sure Richard would love to have some subscriber company. And that's just a matter of clicking that box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and it'll go from there for a while at least. And that's how we keep all of this going, and we try to thank our subscribers by sending out the bumper stickers Scott had created for us, our buddy Scott, a horn bumper sticker, and or the unique, you can only get it here, they want it all bumper sticker that features a hog in a top hat. It's nice. It's cool. And you can only get it here. So that's out there. Otherwise, just fill out the fields, get to the next screen. That's where you say, hey, I want to use a credit card, or hey, I want to use a PayPal account. And if you click credit card, you do credit card. If you click PayPal, you do PayPal. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, then the mailing address for checks and money orders is the Horn, which is how the checks and money orders should be made payable, because I never see them. Boss Man Wayne does all that. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And if you want to let me know in advance, I can tell Boss Man Wayne that he needs to go and have a look. And that way he won't have to take his spider-proof gloves with him out of the big red truck when he goes in to check the mail. He can just take the old Louisville slugger with him, in case he runs into a Klansman, because the Klan gets their mail there, too. And nobody has yet figured out how it is that UPS thinks the Klan is doing the business with the Klan is a good idea. But that's how that works. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, noting loud and clear on this birthday Monday on TuneIn. Long live the Horn. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very, very kindly. Appreciate, A, you being part of the community, and B, you letting me know that the program's reaching, because it's not quite like terrestrial radio where there's a little confirmation speaker that turns on when you turn the microphone off, and the microphone's on anyway, so I'd never know. Confusing?
No.
And, of course, I suppose it's fairly fitting that we would have an anniversary evening on a Monday because, well, that makes this Moran Monday, doesn't it? Yes. Every Monday is Moran Monday on the Horn. That's the day that we celebrate, well, you know, Morans. Right-wing Morans. And just as a review, we say Morans and not morons because of the eponymous photograph from back in the heady days of the beginning of the Iraq War when a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelical went to an anti-war protest somewhere near St. Louis with his poster that said, "Get a brain, Morans." And thus, Moran Monday. And like I said, one of the reasons we're not using any old clips of the program is because we've got so goddamn many morons in so many different directions. And so we, there's no time like the present. That's right. Let's get it started.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. Waste no time. A rolling stone gathers no gravy. Head on over here, right here, as I'm standing. Gather round, everybody. Gather round, one and all. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, we've got them all. We've got them all for you right here, just a little ways off the midway, just away from where you throw the ping pong balls at the goldfish bowls and shoot the crooked-barreled machine gun BB guns at the little tiny paper stars that you can never fully shoot out and win the stuffed animal. Or much of anything, frankly. No, we've got no prizes over here at the Moran Monday tent. We've just got morons, and we've got them all. Behind this thin, cybernetic veil of canvas, you'll find them all. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, healthers, booger eaters, libertarians, republicans, Klansmen. Each and every one of them, sooner or later, represented behind the thin cybernetic veil of the Moran Monday tent. It costs next to nothing to enter the Moran Monday tent. It costs nothing at all. You can enter for free. But for subscribers to the Horn, it is in fact a bargain. The biggest bargain off the Carnival Midway, insofar as it's something less than 17 cents per hour of programming figured out over the course of a year or so for a $10 a month subscriber. Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. Quick advisory upon entering the Moran Monday tent. Visitors are advised to hang on to purses, wallets, small children, pets, European messenger bags, and even that iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, because, of course, the morons can get grabby. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Come on in, come on in. And after that, head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits and morons. Oh, you will. And we begin. We begin, oh, where to begin? Because it's so easy, or so difficult, depending on how you look at it. We're stuck in the Trump sewer anyway. We were going to get there sooner or later. Might as well go there now, hadn't we? Yes, let's do. In a couple of different directions. Or from a couple of different, shall we say, perspectives. Let's start with a member of the of the anus mouthed tribe of Donald Trump. Now, it's not their fault. They were born with mouths that look like anuses, but it is, you know, just as just Homer described fleet-footed Achilles, stern Agamemnon, hot-tempered, Menelaus, all of those things. Well, you know, if the Trump gets were to show up in the Iliad, it would be, you know, the anus-mouthed Trump kids. And one of them is, of course, Eric Trump. You know, they just get that shower mixture. You know, anybody who's ever seen a dog walking around with their tail curled up knows what the mouth of a Trump looks like. I mean, it just is. And so it was that Eric Trump went to, you know, because Moran. Eric Trump went to a pro-Donald rally this past Friday, where he met, and this happened in North Carolina, by the way, where he met a lovely young woman by the name of Annie Cardell. And Annie Cardell was wearing a white T-shirt at a Trump rally that had written on it, and it was like a handmade T-shirt. It didn't go to a print shop for this or anything. It just said, Latina contra Trump. This, of course, in Spanish means Latins or Latina, not Latins. Come on. Yeah, me and Dan Quayle. Yeah. I'm going to South America soon. It's a pity I didn't study my Latin better. Going to Latin America. So, Latinas against Trump, Latinas contra Trump, and anus-mouthed Eric Trump stood proudly next to her without the first flippin' clue that he was standing next to someone whose shirt said Latinas against Trump. She told BuzzFeed, "We weren't protesting the fact that he's a conservative or a Republican. It's been almost 2 years of Trump continuously putting down Latinos, making us feel like we don't belong. So my whole thing was to go there and say, I'm Latina and we're against you because of what you say about our race." "We were kind of in disbelief that no one understood this protest," her sister said. "Really goes to show a lack of diversity in their team." Well, okay, we could call it a lack of diversity if need be, but no, that's not what it means. It means that learning a different language, which we know to be something that is really, really good for sort of expanding the developing brain of a child. And you know, for instance, a child that is brought to the United States by his or her parents who are coming here as undocumented immigrants, that child eventually will be fluent both in Spanish and English. And so that, you know, the English part, so that he or she can understand when some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical repiglican says, "I hate the illegals." Right? Yeah. What a great introduction to Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, in the universe, now, today, forever, under God. Amen. But growing up Eric Anus Mouth Trump never, I suppose, felt the need to learn any language other than the mother tongue as spoken there on the island of Manhattan. So he was completely clueless when it turned out that he was standing next to a person who was wearing a t-shirt that said Latinas against Trump. Of course, he's a classy guy. I'm going to need some help from the out west contingent of the Horn here. It's my understanding that if you go to In-N-Out Burger, they have something called the free water cup, because they're glad for you to have a glass of water, but they don't want to use their big old, we pay big money for our In-N-Out Burger cups for them. So there's, you know, just little plastic cups over there, and so you can go and get water. A photograph appeared on the Twitter of anus-mouthed Eric Trump standing with a fella. And in the tweet, it notes, Trump's kid is drinking lemonade out of the free water cup. In other words, anus-mouthed Eric Trump stole lemonade from In-N-Out Burger. But then again, he's a scion of a billionaire family, and you know, so what if he steals a glass of lemonade once in a while? You right? Right. Oh, and thank you very kindly to Ralphs. Okay, we're gonna go to another story here in a moment. Ralphs has put an offer on the table. And we'll call it the Horn 11th Birthday Challenge. And Ralphs says, I'm offering an $11 challenge to the new people that subscribe until the November election. Wow, that's a long... Oh, that's not that long way off. Damn. That's 15 days. Minus 2 days of weekend, 4 days of weekend, 15 minus four, that's 11! My ciphering's getting so good. From now until the November election, Ralphs says she will add $11 to any new subscriber. So if you subscribe to $10 a month, Ralphs is gonna double plus one your first month's subscription. And this being the time of the month when we don't have many subscribers, that'll be awesome. So what a great way to get your subscription off to a little jump start. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very kindly. Ralphs says, have a great 11th birthday. Hugs. She said, I hope the offer's understandable. Yes. And that more than just understandable. Magnificently generous. So thank you very kindly. And thank you to Glenn. And thank you to Charlie for jumping in. Let's see, for the evening's fundraising goal, we're now down to $165. Thank you very, very much. So, okay, so we covered the Trump get. We've got that now, right? Yeah. Well, it is. It's Moran Monday, and it's Moran Monday 2016, which is referred to by enforcement of some sort of unspoken or ancient Christian decree as 2016 AD, or in the scientific community that tries not to be religiously bigoted, CE, 2016 CE.
Okay. So we're gonna, and you can see. I mean, I got a note on Twitter from somebody saying, "Well, yeah, but even the tour guides in the Roman Forum say B.C. and A.D. I mean, you know, Rome, home of the church, maybe not the best example of where we would want, but yeah, you get the idea. Nonetheless. Dating is always, and no, I don't mean like dating. I mean like how you establish when something happened. The ancient Romans used AUC ab urbe condita from the founding of the city, which was 753. But then they didn't really use numbers. They would say in the consulship of Gaius Julius Caesar and, who was it, Metellus? Was it Metellus? He was such a little twit, it's hard to remember. Jackass. The things weren't going his way, so he declared that he would not participate in his own consulship and went and hid in his house for a year. Taking time out, to come out and say that, oh, I saw some ravens today. That's a bad omen. Can't do any business. It was the ancient Roman version of a filibuster. But never mind. That would have taken place in B.C., B.C.E., or something, A.U.C., or whatever. But it's important to be able to tell when it is that something, you know, happens. And this being Moran Monday and everything, I think we might want to go to let's go to the for-profit media. Over there on the Tiffany Network, CBS, where they have Face the Nation. They had a very special Sunday yesterday in which they got a group of potential voters in Nevada and started asking them about who they supported and, you know, why and what they cared about and et cetera. And, well, it probably wasn't intentional, but we have something here. We have the beginning of a new chronological standard, and those don't come along just every day. Potential Trump voter Barbara was one of the panel, and she explained that she was looking for she really did trust the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini to make America great again. We'll pick things up courtesy of Face the Nation in medias res. Get the hockey puck. You'll know when we get where we're going. Trust me.
Great and wonderful. We're going to get tired of winning. When to win so much, it's just going to be unbelievable. And that says nothing. That just tells you nothing.
Barbara, what about you? What's a big issue for you?
Morality and values based on what the country was based on. I think that the laws that Obama has passed, the way the country has, I call it downturning.
I try not to sound like an elitist snob. I realize I fail in that effort from time to time. You just kind of want to analyze what Barbara said there, almost word by word. Because with the first word that comes out of her mouth, you realize we're in a pretty rickety train on some pretty shaky tracks.
Big issue for you.
Morality and values, based on what the country was based on.
Got that? Mm-hmm. Morality and values based on what the country was based on. Because the country was based on that. Morality and values. Values like owning other human beings. Values like women like Barbara having a 20-year or 30-year sometimes, or 40-year sometimes, lower life expectancy than their male counterparts. Values and morality like the country was based on. Like committing genocide against the indigenous peoples of this continent. You know, Merkin values. Yeah, oh, by the way, I've told you before that I try to learn something new every evening. Well, last night's something new. So I start looking at one thing, and then I wind up looking at another. And I've had a real fascination lately with the border area between Kentucky and Virginia. The Virginia side of it is blown all to hell. People in Wise County, Virginia are sick, and as much as like a third or more of their county is just gone, right? Some of the Kentucky side has been preserved in some of Kentucky's finest state parks. The Pine Mountain State Park is just freaking beautiful. The highest point in Kentucky, Black Mountain, has not been blown away. Not far from there, there is a little state park called Kingdom Come State Park, based on the late 19th century novel by John Fox Jr., which is what I've been sort of nosing around in, called The Little Shepherd of Kingdom Come. And it has all the... It's pretty syrupy. It's written very, very late 19th century. That sort of Mark Twain-ish language that everybody wrote in. Well, you know, what it is Victorian high prose. In what had merged into the, I suppose, Edwardian era. Yes, Brother Deacon Asa. Yes, values like grabbing them by the... But anyway, so I'm researching that, but that takes me on a little wander through the state park system of Kentucky, of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan. And lo and behold, what do I find? I find out that the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan, maintains a state park that is a memorial to Jefferson Davis. Now, Kentucky also has a state park that's the old Lincoln birthplace and homestead with a 19th century recreation, you know, frontier log cabin kind of, that was the way it was sort of thing. And yeah. But there's beautiful state parks in Kentucky. Kentucky's a beautiful commonwealth. But they maintain a state park that is a memorial to Jefferson Davis. Really? A man who committed open treason against the United States was the president of a country that started a war with the United States. And it's not just like they've got a sign by the side of the road that says, you know, Jefferson Davis Memorial. No, this son of a bitch is an over 30-story tall obelisk in the model of the Washington Monument. Because, of course, George Washington gets the Washington Monument because he was the father of his country. So naturally, Jefferson Davis has to get an obelisk for a memorial because he was the father of his. First president and all, only. You know, until the Confederacy got its ass handed to it. But then I started, maybe it's like a 12-foot obelisk kind of thing. Maybe it's his grave. No. So, and then I read on it, it's 330 some odd feet high. Really? Which immediately got my little mind going the way my little mind goes. And I went to, how tall is the Washington Monument? And I found out that the Washington Monument is 551 feet tall. And because the goddess of irony is, if not a good goddess, at least a consistent one, I then realized that the Jefferson Davis Memorial in Kentucky to a man who committed treason against his country, who got 300,000 Americans killed and 300,000 traitors killed, is 3/5 the size of the Washington Monument. It's a beautiful thing. It's just a beautiful thing what the goddess of irony does sometimes. But, you know, the values that our country was founded on kind of values. That's what Trumpansie Barbara wants. Right? Okay, and what about those values there, Babs?
I think that the laws that Obama has passed, the way the country has, I call it downturning.
The laws that Obama has passed. You know, no wonder the Trumpansies don't mind the idea of a fascist dictator taking the helm of the United States. They've been telling themselves for 8 years that they've got one already, and he's even wrong colored. How many times have we had references on this program over the course of the last 8 years referring to the tyrant Obama? Huh? A lot. The tyrannical rule. He wants to be our king. A lot. And so she thinks he's passed laws. In the 8 years that he's been president of the United States and can get next to nothing done because of a Congress that refuses to do its job and, you know, make laws and pass bills into law pursuant to the methodology laid out and put forward and set forth by the Constitution of the United States. Yeah, we've had next to nothing. Very little in the way of meaningful legislation passed by the Congress. I mean, 50, 60, something like that times they've passed in one house or the other, and bills to save Merca from the creeping socialism of being able to go to the doctor when we're sick. Yeah. And to the extent that Barbara's, that those laws that have led to our Obama turning down downturning have downturned us, any laws that were passed by the Congress that she supports because it's a Republican majority Congress. Well, I mean, except for the Obamacare thing, and that's got to, God. And we're not even to the hockey puck part yet. No. Yeah, Carol Baker caught it. Yes, the Jefferson Davis Memorial is 3/5 the size of the Washington Monument, like how our country valued a black life as 3/5 of a human being in the Constitution. Another one of those values we had based on our values that the founders valued when they passed our values country into whatever. Now, that was only for voting purposes, of course. It was. It was just for... Because they weren't even people at all. I mean, you could... It's not like they had a charge of killing 3/5 of a human being if a slave owner murdered a slave, or you know, had them beaten, whipped, tortured, tormented, hung, burned, whatever, into a state of wishing they were dead. Well, hell no! That's property! That ain't 3/5 of a human. That ain't no human at all. You know, values. Conservative values. Back to Babs. There's a verb out there somewhere, and she's going to find one.
Some of the other people are out of it and happy for it. I personally am against it. The homosexuals, the abortions, all this stuff, I am against.
When Donald Trump says, make America great again, is that what you hear? That it's going to go back to the before the time that you're now describing?
That's part of it.
Kimberly, it's the day after the election.
Yeah, so Babs is done now. That's part of it. If Donald Trump is elected president, we're going to have a new chronological standard. BH, before homosexuals. Like, as in, I remember when we could watch TV and Caitlyn Jenner wouldn't be on it all the time. That would be 10 years BH before homosexuals. Yeah, never mind. There's, I'm not talking about transgender. You know that. It's just that they think, you know, you're bisexuals, you're lesbians, you're homosexuals, you're queer questioning, you're trans men, you're trans women, you're people who are not really sure at all about gender and just kind of resent the whole idea altogether. They all go in the same basket of what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when music in Merca was good. Back 30 years BH. You know, before homosexuals. Back when Lee Greenwood stood up for what it meant to be Merkin.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, work for all my life. And I,
you know, because the homosexuals took them away. Yeah. That's a tough one. I mean, it's established, I think, pretty closely, like, but that things change. You know, Caesar monkeyed with the calendar, the Pope's monkeyed with the calendar. Stephen New York says, so what year was Alexander the Great born? Because, you know, homosexual. And you know, Babs here is sure that some of those people are happy, but, you know, the homosexuals and abortions. Not the abortionists or the people who have abortions. You'll notice she said the homosexuals and abortions. The abortions are happy. you know, the precious little fetuses, she's all fired worry about. We thought they's done murdered, but instead they're out there happy them abortions are. Hoop! So we got we'll try to work up the new dating standard. And by the way, thank you to Haley out in far Arkansas for pointing that story out to me. Before homosexuals. What do you do with Liberace? Rock Hudson. Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's in that time that's that Babs is thinking about there that was before homosexuals. Maybe instead of BH, we would use BOC, before BOOC, before out of closet. Which is not to be confused with the Beatles lyric, flew in from Miami Beach, B-O-A-C. No. B-O-O-C. Asa out in Vancouver points out, Babs would have been proud of Iranian President Ahmadinejad, or Ahmadinejad. As you know, he stood proudly in front of the UN and proclaimed, "We don't got no homosexuals in Iran. That's a problem only in Merca." True story. And it is. So maybe Babs wants to be an Iranian? I know. Asa, there, you're there in Canada, up there with a lot of our other good friends like Sentient Being and Kath And of course, Ron in the soon-to-be frozen north, we hope, because if it don't, well, we need you guys to be cold or else the whole planet is. The disease is spreading. The disease, the American disease is metastasizing. I guess video, whatever, news reports, the interweb tubes have crossed the world's longest border between two countries. And some Canadians are, instead of being the most civil and decent people on earth, some Canadians have decided they want to be more like Merkins. I take you now to Abbotsford, British Columbia, where an incident over, no, really, parking led to what you're about to hear. A white dude had improperly and illegally parked, and apparently in Abbotsford, British Columbia, they take that awfully damn seriously. Illegally and improperly parked and was being ticketed for doing so, and saw a person of South Asian descent nearby. This was more than our white guy Canadian was willing up with which to put. Run little Timmy and little Cindy out of the room. 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. Sorry, Canada. I wish I could tell you that this was a joke. It isn't.
Huh? Is there a problem?
You fucking packy? Go back to fucking India. You fucking Hindu? All you Hindus fucking camel riding motherfuckers. You camel rider motherfucker, go back to Hindi. White power motherfucker.
man, you wish it was already over, don't you?
Yeah, I'm going to load my car.
Here. I'll film you too. How do you like that, you fucking Hindu? Are you a Hindu? When did you come to Canada?
I was born in Canada.
Are you born in Canada? When did you learn not to fucking mind your own business, you fucking Hindu?
You're actually parked in
yeah,
the spot.
Yeah, and we're trying to turn around. And you're there and she's there. Can't get out. Isn't it funny? Huh? You fucking shitskin? Huh? How do you like it? Huh? I'm not threatening you. Don't feel threatened. You're taking a picture of me. Have a nice day, sir.
You too, have a nice day.
You too. We can have a safe drive home.
Yeah, we will. Have a nice day.
You fucking shit skin Hindu.
Honest to God, I don't think you get that in Canada without we do it down here first. Somebody's been going to Stormfront. He was using all the magic words. And yet, it is Canada, because he also, there's vulgarity aplenty. But he spices it up a little bit with a, have a nice day, hey. The vehicle he's in, which by the way is a big old jacked up pick-em-up truck, is clearly parked in a spot that says reserved. I guess this was like an apartment complex or something. Well, you know, you take your victories where you can find them, Asa. Asa, who's also in, you know, BC, says, I'm glad they parted ways without shooting at each other. Here in Merca, that would not have been the case because, of course, our white power motherfucker guy, that's what he said, would have been armed to the teeth and stood his ground, because I'm sure he would have been terrified of the guy of South Asian descent. I was born in Canada. Did you ever wear a turban? You think your wife would like you better that way? And of course, if that had happened in the United States, the other guy would have responded, "Well, your wife likes me better just fine." And then the bullets would have started flying, because freedom. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, says, sounded an awful lot like a Merkin expat to me. No, because, you know, I heard, but then again, you know, I don't know, maybe he's from Alaska. You know, because he kind of had that Sarah Palin thing going for him. It was, you know, because... had he been a redneck, you know, one, shitskin wouldn't have been used, and two, it wouldn't have sounded like that. I don't know. I'd prefer to think it hasn't, but Carol, I'm afraid the disease really has metastasized. Yeah, Steve in New York. How could anyone feel threatened by that? And see, I think that's kind of the takeaway on all this. Robert, somewhere up near Morgantown, says, Trump, elected or not, is going to give us a lot of Timothy McVeighs and maybe a Lee Harvey Oswald. One hopes not. But I think the possibility is real and distinct. By the way, happy birthday to Charlie. He said, today's also my birthday. I was born October 24th, 1954. Happy birthday indeed, Charlie, and many happy returns. And thanks for help getting us started this evening. Thanks, Paul, for jumping in. We're down to 1:45 for the evening. Thank you very kindly on this 11th birthday evening. The Roman Metellus, according to Scott and Punky, wasn't Metellus the ancient Roman toy manufacturer who coined the slogan, if it's Metellus, it's Swellus? Does Punky not vet this stuff, Scott? Because you're going to hell for sending it, and I'm going to hell for reading it. Such punishment. Yeah. Meanwhile, I guess the downturn in Merca that Babs was talking about included, as Tim from L.A. points out, the Republicans did support a law and even had a veto-proof majority, too. Congress thwarts Obama on bill allowing 9/11 lawsuits against Saudi Arabia. Then they realized that the same bill they passed can be used against the U.S. Boy, are the Republicans stupid. Oh, and can we now sue Japan and TEPCO for their fuck-up in Fukushima? Or maybe Japan can sue for Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and Pearl Harbor? I mean, we'd sue for Pearl Harbor, wouldn't we? I mean, then there are the countries in Southeast Asia, Latin America, Asia, Africa, Europe. So what the f*** is that woman talking about? It was the Republicans' fault for causing this mess. Yeah, but she caused it. They caused it to make America great again, Tim. That's what you don't understand. Because, you know, make America great again. Yeah, there's more. Oh, Lord, yes, there's more. Dr. John sent something along. Really is getting nasty out there, not just generally, but specifically. Twitter being the platform of choice because Twitter isn't particularly interested in policing its content. Hell, for all we know, Twitter may go away at some point or diminish significantly because they can't find a way to really make a great gobs of money. And because Twitter has become the haven of hatred, for instance, Disney looked at buying Twitter, and then they walked back and said, no, that place over there is nasty. Because it is. Over at BuzzFeed, courtesy of Dr. John, we learn a new old German word, Lügenpresse. Lügenpresse. Just like it sounds, it's a German word. And Rosie Gray, writing at BuzzFeed, notes that the Trumpansies, who have a lot of Nazis and Klansmen and so-called white nationalists in them, you know, racists, bigots, have taken to screaming that word at his rallies. Lügenpresse. Rosie Gray writes, tell the truth and CNN sucks have become staples at nearly every Trump rally. On Saturday night, a new and foreign accusation came to the fore. Lügenpresse. Lügenpresse. It means the lying press. In particular, the Nazis used it to discredit journalists who were trying to write about what was happening in the rise of the Third Reich. The far-right anti-immigrant groups that have popped up in Germany in the last few years have revived the word, Lügenpresse. And there it was. There it was on display at a Make America Great Again rally in Cleveland. Dear Cleveland, the land of Cleve, Ohio. Yeah. It happened. It happened when a man approached the press pen, and yes, there's a press pen. At Trump rallies, because they're all hemmed in a pen, really, so that they can be got at real easy by the Make America Great Again crowd. Let's see what we got here, shall we? Might work, might not. Looks like the machine is going to side with not. So we won't have the actual live audio. Maybe we will. Wait, possibly? Could we? Eh? Try it. Working. No, guess not. But we didn't really need it, did we? Oh, are we? Oh, it's teasing me.
Lügenpresse! You said it right. That's right. You're all in bed with me, with the twins.
Let's see if we can get that a little better. Yeah, try again.
That's what you are! That's what you are! Lügenpresse! You said it right. That's right. You're done.
Yeah, I think we've got the idea. Rosie Gray writes, the traveling press was quickly hustled out of the venue and on toward the next rally. I didn't have a chance to ask a man his name or how he came across the term. I tweeted the video I shot of the two men and left it at that, not realizing how quickly and widely the moment would be circulated. Richard Spencer, the white nationalist leader who is considered one of the leaders of the alt-right, was able to shed some light on this for me. I see lying press and Lügenpresse all over the place, Spencer said in an email. It's typical alt-right. Serious, ironic, and with a sly reference to boot. Yeah, that's what it is. Murder. Murder. That's a sly reference to murder. And Spencer says it's been in use in the American so-called alt-right, and where the hell did that come from? What the hell was wrong with fringe? Oh, no, it's alt, okay? You know, like alt-country and, you know, alt-pop. Which, of course, in English means alternate, but... in German, doesn't alt mean old? alt-right. Yeah, the old right wing indeed. And apparently Lügenpresse as a hashtag on Twitter is pretty busy. Breitbart News, Rosie Gray says, reported favorably on the term in an interview earlier this year with the leader of the German far-right group Pegida. Breitbart wrote, "It will come as no surprise to many." Oh, I'm sorry. "It will come as no surprise to many that the mainstream media would lash out against a word that highlights their own intentional failings. But Lutz Bachmann's Pegida has popularized the term to the point where it has become a pillar, even a rallying cry for the nationalist populist movements across the continent." Ah, this will certainly end well. You might want to pay attention, though. You're going to be seeing it, probably more. And you'll note that in the clip, even though it was a little choppy, you'll note that they've already bought into the idea that you know, and I mean this thing's got some analytical. It requires some analytical depth. Because what they're saying is that you, me, I, we, us, over here, you know, progressives, granted, we have our little spats over people like, you know, that woman from Massachusetts. But for the most part, we share a lot of common ideals. And if it weren't for the lying press, we too would understand how truly great Donald Trump is. And yeah, it's frightening that these Nazi era words have made it into Trump rallies. But it's undeniable that it has. Rosie Gray adds, "The fact that the word's being bandied about at Trump rallies is yet another sign of the alt-right's increasing influence, so it's still unclear how many people actually identify as alt-right." Rosie Gray says, "The number is likely relatively small." Well, if they self-identify, but then again, you've also got the duck factor to consider, as in, if it walks like a and quacks like a, it is a. If it honks like a goose and steps like a goose, it's probably a Nazi. She closes saying, "Meanwhile, the hatred toward the press among the larger population of Trump supporters grows increasingly pronounced nearly every day. In these final weeks of the campaign, at nearly every rally, Trump riles up his audience against the press as reporters sit in the media pen, easy targets for vitriol. Reporters disembarking the press bus at Trump's rally in Naples, Florida on Sunday, the day after the Lügenpresse incident, were immediately greeted by boos and shouts of, 'Tell the truth!'" Yeah. Now, in turn, I mean, this is a larger issue. As Dr. John pointed out, paired with this, you know, the BuzzFeed story from Rosie Gray, from AP White House correspondent Josh Lederman on Twitter this weekend. Quote, reader email, "Trump spent 10 seconds on the stupid bitches. You spend half a story. Somebody should put a bullet in your fucking head." You know, over the sexual assault issue. Dr. John says, "That's one of maybe a dozen direct threats my colleagues have publicly reported that I've seen. There must be more. Trump has encouraged this, though not directly orchestrated it. This is intimidation designed to silence criticism. No, not even criticism, but just news reporting. Why can't anybody stop him from attacking a constitutional protection? Free speech! Freedom of speech! Because we have this fetishized interpretation of the First Amendment to the Constitution that says everything goes and we're not even interested in things like incitement anymore. Look, let's understand something clearly here. And I don't want this to become a prophecy, and I don't want it to be true, but Rosie Gray pointed out in the BuzzFeed story, you know, that reporters sit in the media pen, easy targets for vitriol. Well, that ain't all they're easy targets for. Remember earlier in the campaign during the primary season, when Trump was encouraging people to beat the shit out of anybody who dissented from his racist, homophobic, xenophobic, white power message? No, I'll pay their legal bills. Yeah, I promise you. Yeah. And here's the thing. And this is what I mean about a fetishized interpretation of the Constitution. If Donald Trump was standing at the podium whipping his orcs into a white, and I do mean white, hot fury, and they decided to go over to the press pen and rip reporters limb from limb, and I'm not trying to be over the top here. This isn't hyperbole. Mobs are capable of that sort of thing. But if his followers, in his presence with him at the podium, were to kill a reporter or dozen, law enforcement would not touch him. He would not be indicted. He would not be charged. He would not be arrested. He would damn sure not be tried and not convicted. And if he were convicted, the conviction would be overturned because, well, he wasn't the one to incitement. What incitement? I mean, he's a politician just delivering a political. I mean, political speech is the most sacred, hallowed speech we have in the new United States of America. You know, even when you're inciting your followers to commit murder. Carol Baker says, I'm not letting Trump off the hook. He knows who his base is. Hell, he's been, as Carol says, he's been courting these people for a long, long time. Carol offers a quote. I urge all readers of this site to do whatever they can to make Donald Trump president, wrote Andrew Anglin, publisher of the neo-Nazi site Daily Stormer. 12 days later, Anglin, a 32-year-old skinhead who wears an Aryan black sun tattoo on his chest and riffs about the inferior biological nature of black people, hailed Trump as the only candidate who is even talking about anything at all that matters. Meet the neo-Nazis, Klansmen, and other extremists who have endorsed Trump. By John Bazemore at the Associated Press. This neo-Nazi seal of approval initially seemed like an aberration, but 2 months later, when Trump released his immigration policy, far-right extremists saw a clear signal that Trump understood their core anger and fear about America being taken over by minorities and foreigners. Trump's plan to deport masses of undocumented immigrants and end birthright citizenship was radical and thrilling. A revolution, in the words of influential white nationalist author Kevin MacDonald, to restore a white America. Kevin MacDonald, a 70-year-old silver-haired former academic who edits the Occidental Observer, which the Anti-Defamation League calls online anti-Semitism's new voice, said Trump's move on immigration was a game changer. He went on to write, Trump is saying what white Americans have been actually thinking for a very long time. And he's not just saying what they've been thinking, he's legitimizing their presence in the political process when they should have none. Yeah, okay, you're a conservative Republican. I'm a progressive Democrat. There's not a lot of commonality between us. But neither of us, hopefully, are out there advocating murder. Well, you are, you godless Tommy. You want to murder all the precious little fetuses. That's how it goes. But yeah, Dr. John's right. Trump has encouraged this, though not directly orchestrated it. I'm beginning to wonder about the orchestration part. Meanwhile, over at the New Yorker, Ryan Lizza has a piece from a few days back. Twitter's anti-Semitism problem. Yesterday morning, Jonathan Weissman, Ryan Lizza writes, an editor at the Times woke up and looked at Twitter where he had a public message from a stranger. Hostile foreign power, it said. Jews. Looking at the profile of the sender, the profile read, The Chosen, with three parens on either side, should not be so foolish to believe the current state of affairs shall last forever. Open borders for Israel, Trump 2016, alt-right. Mr. Weissman, apparently, is one of the 10 journalists who receive the most anti-Semitic harassment on Twitter, according to the Anti-Defamation League. Weissman told Mr. Lizza, I basically wake up to this every morning. You actually do become inured to it, but it's omnipresent. If you want, you can read the ADL report. I encourage you to. Over at ADL.org, it's under their press center. ADL Task Force issues report detailing widespread anti-Semitic harassment of journalists on Twitter during 2016 campaign. 800 reporters targeted, 1,600 accounts responsible for two-thirds of hateful tweets. They managed to find, and these were their parameters, keywords and keyword combinations designed by ADL to capture anti-Semitic language on social media. By that method, they found 2.6 million tweets on Twitter between August 2015 and July 2016. Those 2.6 million tweets had 10 billion impressions. 10 billion sets of eyeballs had seen them. From January 2016 to July 2016, the anti-Semitic tweets went through the roof. Many of the tweets were directed at some 50,000 journalists in the United States. 19,253 anti-Semitic tweets were directed at the journalists, but the total number of anti-Semitic tweets directed at journalists overall could be much higher, the ADL writes, for a variety of factors noted in the report. There are 313 million existing Twitter accounts, 1,600 Twitter accounts sent 68% of the anti-Semitic tweets. Jesus. Let's see. A small cohort of journalists bore the brunt of the online abuse. There were some 19,253 overtly anti-Semitic tweets sent by at least 800 sent to at least 800 journalists in the U.S. during the 12-month study. The top 10 most targeted journalists, all of whom are Jewish, received 83% of the tweets. Ben Shapiro, conservative columnist, Yair Rosenberg of Tablet, Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic, and Jonathan Weissman of The New York Times, and Sally Cohn and Jake Tapper over at CNN. Of all of those accounts, Twitter deactivated only 21%. You know, damn. Why, here's Barbara McMahon, who goes by at South Salem. Dishonest MSM lied and blamed Trump rhetoric and supporters, then mule when booed at rallies and called Hillary's Lügenpresse rigged, hashtag MAGA. MAGA is their rallying cry, the shorthand for Make America Grope Again. I mean, Make America Great Again. These are some sick sons of bitches. Thank you for that, Carol. Seriously, some sick sons of bitches. But the thing is, they're past sick. They're well past sick. They have murder in their souls. They send tweets about putting Jewish journalists and their family members in ovens. They send tweets to Jewish journalists about having them made into lampshades. Of the 1,600 Twitter attackers the ADL identified in their bios, the words that appear most often are Trump, nationalist, conservative, and white. One journalist at Politico, Hadas Gold, received a PM on Twitter that showed a picture of her with a bullet hole in her forehead and a yellow Star of David on her shirt. The message said, "Don't mess with our boy Trump or you will be first in line for the camp." Hadas Gold's grandmother barely escaped Poland ahead of the Holocaust. Of the 79% of the accounts that were not deactivated, Jonathan Greenblatt at ADL said, "It validates what I've heard from journalist after journalist and others who have found themselves victimized. Oftentimes, the companies, and in particular Twitter, have not done enough." Because we fetishize free speech. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for Twitter said, "Hateful conduct has no place on Twitter, and we address this issue every day with government, our partners in civil society, and our peers in the technology sector, except we really don't." I'm sorry, I added the "except we really don't" part, because they really don't. Jeffrey Goldberg over at The Atlantic, the new editor there, said, "Gets wearying after a while to open Twitter and have 100 different messages from people who want to see my family gassed. It makes me depressed about humanity, and I don't want to start my day that way. After a while, my experience became something like, 'Thank you, Gestapo Bro 88, for your suggestion that my family should be shoved into the ovens, but I've already gotten that message from many of your compatriots this morning.'" Jake Tapper said, it's probably not what it's like to be a woman or a person of color on social media on any given day. But Twitter has become a cesspool for anti-Semites, homophobes, and racists. Twitter, on the other hand, responding to the ADL report, said Twitter has new policies and products. On the other hand, examining the ADL data, Twitter said, we don't believe these numbers are accurate. In other words, Jake Tapper's a liar. Hottest Gold is a liar. The ADL's a liar. Now, for me, and maybe this is where I get in trouble, I draw a distinction between, and I know some people don't see this distinction or agree with it, but I draw a distinction between legitimate criticism of the policies and practices of the state of Israel and actual anti-Semitism. It is not anti-Semitic to say that Israel should probably not use precision-guided rockets to murder six-month-old Palestinian babies in their fucking cradles. There's nothing anti-Semitic about that in the least. Because I also think the United States should not use precision-guided weapons or sell precision-guided weapons to, say, the Saudi Arabians, who use them to blow away little Yemeni babies in their cradles. I don't think the Syrian government should use precision-guided weapons to murder little Syrian children. You know, precision-guided weapons they bought from Russia. To murder little Syrian babies in their cradles. I'm pro-peace. On the other hand, if you're telling someone they want you to be made into a want your family made into lampshades, yeah, that's a straight-up Nazi reference. And it's anti-Semitic as hell. If you're using, one would hope the distinction is fairly easy. And I realize that there are probably issues with some people by me. You know, yes, it is possible to be anti-Semitic about the state of Israel. That's absolutely possible. But, oh, you know what I'm talking about. The Israeli left can more easily criticize the right-wing fascistic Israeli government than anybody in the United States can. And God forbid if you're a member of the media and try to do it. You'll be buried. And so, you know what happens to people like that? They're called self-hating Jews. And yeah, Asa, that's a great point. The ironic thing, Asa points out, being that people like Jake Tapper gave Trump his platform in the first place. Let's not forget that. You know why let's not forget that? Because it's true. They like to use the MSM, and this being our birthday and everything, maybe I'd better explain something. I created the term, and I use it, the for-profit media. And I started using it probably more than 11 years ago. And I use it in a very specific meaning, and I've been criticized by some for it, but I'm sticking with it. I don't use mainstream media or lamestream media like Godzilla from Wasilla does. For-profit media is a pretty straightforward term, and it refers to operations that are more concerned with profit than they are with fulfilling an actual obligation to journalism, to real journalism. And all you have to do is turn on the television and you can see what I mean presenting itself self-definitionally. Is that even a term? It is now. The for-profit media care more about the advertising dollars they get than the content they produce. And it's an ad hoc judgment. Made, you know, on a case-by-case basis. But this is... this is not going to go away. I mean... And it's not limited exclusively to people who are Jewish. It's not limited exclusively to people who criticize Trump. I mean, hell, I got run off of terrestrial radio for criticizing the coal industry in West Virginia. No, I'm not climbing up on the cross, and I know we all need the wood. That's not what this is about. In the course of my reading last night, I ran across the biography of a man named Cassius Marcellus Clay. No, not the man who would later become Muhammad Ali, but the man for whom Muhammad Ali's father was named. Cassius Marcellus Clay was a son of privilege in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. He was educated first at Transylvania University. Don't laugh. That's what Kentucky was called before it was Kentucky. He went from Transylvania College at the time to Yale and received the finest education that was available in the United States. And while he was in New England, He became acquainted with, listened to, taught by a man named Garrison. William Lloyd Garrison, who was one of the most strident abolitionists of his day, and in many ways the leading light of the abolition movement in New England that drove the issue. And Cassius Marcellus Clay came home to his privileged life in the Commonwealth of Kentucky and declared himself an abolitionist. At one point in time, he opened up a newspaper office in Louisville. Louisville, of course, being also where Muhammad Ali was born. And he refused to be terrorized, and he was, by angry mobs of aggrieved Southerners who believed in owning other people. He opened up a newspaper and printed an abolitionist newspaper in the heart of slavery country. He had armored doors on his newspaper office and a pair of 3-pound cannons inside them. I said he was an abolitionist. I didn't say he was a pacifist. at one point, because, well, you know, when you're dealing with racists and the kind of folks who on another continent would become Nazis, they don't like fair fights one-on-one. So seven men set out to do in Cassius Marcellus Clay. He whipped all seven of them and killed one, because he was determined that the idea he had taken up with was correct, that slavery had to end in the United States. He had vast land holdings, and he gave a number of acres to a man named John G. Fee, who founded a little town in Madison County, Kentucky, called Berea. And there, in about 1855, he founded a college, Berea College, that he said would be absolutely colorblind and genderblind, and would educate equally men, women, black, white. This drove the power structure of old Kentucky quite mad. What am I saying? Why did I go off on this tangent? Because people entrenched in their own sense of privilege and resistant to change will eventually resort to violence. And that's what we're seeing in the Trump phenomenon. My, what a happy, happy little thing I've turned this little 11th birthday party into, haven't I? Well, this has always been the purpose of the Horn. To talk about these things that are maybe, perhaps, in some ways difficult to talk about. The white nationalists, the skinheads, the Nazis, the Klansmen, the racists, the bigots, the misogynists, the homophobes who support Trump, who want us to have the values like the values of the founders' values, those values. Thanks, Babs. Well, what they're really worried about, they talk about freely amongst themselves, the browning of America. They're worried about, to use the term of the Canadian fella in B.C., the shitskins. And that is how they talk amongst themselves. The thing with Trump, though, is he's made it okay for them to talk like that in what we would otherwise consider to be polite society. You could probably argue that that fear and that anger arises out of guilt. Yeah, by God, if there's ever more of them than there are of us, they're going to do to us what we did to them. And every time Bill O'Reilly says, new Black Panther Party, Emery and Marvelline sitting there in their Barca loungers shiver anew with terror of chickens that come home to roost. By the way, Carol Baker points something out. Another note on the unfair media, who have provided Don all the free airtime he could ask for. CNN, where Jake Tapper works, earned approximately $100 million above expected election revenues this year in TV and digital, thanks to the Trump phenomenon. Yeah. Meanwhile, as Carol pointed out, the Trump people paid James O'Keefe, an individual formerly charged with a felony and convicted of a misdemeanor, in regard to nasty efforts in ratfuckery. Yeah, they funded him. So much for bought and paid for media, huh? Maybe. And yes, I've been thinking about these things all day, for several days. I'm a sentimental guy. Maybe that's what makes what we do here kind of special. I'll leave it up to you. But George Soros isn't writing us the big old Soros money check. No Clinton dollars coming in here. There weren't any Bernie dollars either. I don't think you do care a damn about access. And of course, access is what drives people in the for-profit media to stunning acts of fawning or silence or reticence. Little though we are, this is an example of what free and independent media can be. And I kind of personally think it would be nice if we had, you know, more of it. You don't hear a lot of interviews on this program, primarily because it's so damn transactional. When I really, really want to go and talk to somebody about something, yeah, I'll do that. But just to try to hawk up another interview every night, no. I'd rather talk to you by any stretch of the imagination. But we are free in more sense than one. We are free to anybody who wants to listen. Free to anybody who wants to download the podcast. Free to anybody who wants to go listen to the archives. Free to anybody who wants to listen live. We're just free. And we're also free to talk amongst ourselves. All that hate that the one individual gets up to every morning, that is why you will not turn on this program ever, if I'm at all in any position to help it, and hear some right-wing prick opining about, you know, that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, or any of the other silly, drivelous dreck that they've pumped into the body politic for the last 8 years. Who am I kidding? For the last 30. No, wait, 36, maybe more. You know, Arnold asked a little bit ago, he said, why is it that all good progressive media is starving, so maddening, we're the voice of the people? Yeah, well, the people ain't got, the people are doing the best that they can, but the people ain't got access to their own cable networks. If we want to have a voice, we have to create it ourselves. And that's what's happened here. 11 years in, and I still, you know, I still have a vision for what this can be. It can grow. It can get bigger. I think it would be wonderful to have multiple more programs than we already have or have had, and have people actually earning livings doing it. But the problem arises when you try to do that, and at the same time you're out there trying to get whatever advertiser you can to come on board, no matter what. No morals, no nothing. That's how you wind up with ads for clean coal on CNN. Burlington Northern Railway. Because like Larry, Darrell, and Daryl in the old Newhart program of eons past, anything for a buck. God damn, you think if you think if the Klan showed up with a $10 million advertising contract for CNN, that they wouldn't run them ads? Because they would. They'd maybe finesse it or suggest that maybe we do some rebranding and some marketing studies. Goddamn right they're not going to walk away from $10 million, no matter who. And protestations notwithstanding, you'll never convince me that that does not impact the editorial status of the programming. I remember when Soledad O'Brien had a special on CNN about mountaintop removal. A video crew had been into the Coal River Valley and interviewed a lot of people. By the time it got to air, lo and behold, it was a classic case of both sides do it. And we wound up, instead of talking about people being poisoned and killed, places rendered useless and unfit for human life, we got a story of a laid-off mountaintop removal blasting technician who was pissed off because he was going to have to drive 15 more miles to blast a different mountain. At the same time, of course, there were voluminous ads running for the American Clean Coal Energy Extravaganza, or whatever they were calling themselves. Yeah. $100 million Donald Trump earned for CNN alone. What did Les Moonves over at CBS say? He may not be good for the country, but he's been great for CBS. And probably single-handedly responsible for the perpetuation as a going concern of Morning Joe over at MSNBC. And yes, in the course of, you know, this hour and 52 minutes that I've been filibobstering here, yes, a lot of talk about him. And a lot of talk about his violent, weird-ass, hateful followers. But I would offer as a distinction the fact that we're not, that this conversation that we're having bears no resemblance whatsoever to the fawning bullshit duality that you get in, the for-profit media. If there was an iota of integrity about ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, Fox, CNBC, etc., they never would have treated Donald Trump as a legitimate political candidate in the first place. Instead, they gave him massive amounts of free coverage that I saw at one point. I think I saw the number $3 billion worth, and that anus-mouthed pissant has the gall to say that the media have been unfair to him after he's whipped up the worst elements of our country into a white, and I do mean white-hot frenzy that approaches homicidal rage against people who simply report the news? Whew. That, as they say, is a bit much. So, I have. It's been a long time since I've done a two-hour filibobster. But I'll take a break now. You can take a break, too. Yeah, because, you know, I'm not only the host of this program, I'm the goddamn hall monitor. Oh, I can't take a break. Back to the classroom. We got $35 to go in fundraising for the evening. That is amazing. Thank you very, very much. Oh, excuse me, $10. Thank you. Thank you, Charlene. $10 to go in fundraising for the evening. Which, in light of, you know, the bills that we face every month, is pretty freaking awesome. So thank you indeed. I really appreciate it. We really appreciate it. Because it's the only model I've ever been able to figure out for doing live progressive broadcasting and trying to do it in such a way that no goddamn billionaire can pick up the phone and say, well, you've got to quit now. Oh, no, no, no. You pissed off Amalgamated Widget. You're out of here. And poor Keith Olbermann has finally got a gig over at GQ. GQ. And he gets to record segments every couple of days. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, however he wants it to be. But GQ? Talent like his? And, you know, on the other hand, look at the general lineup at Chicken Noodle News. Thank you, Steve. Steve in Georgia Stan said, Cletus. Oh, here's Cletus. Cletus is such a good girl. Oh, she's a sweet girl. Cletus said to make that 10-0. Happy anniversary. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Miss Karen. And thank you, Cletus. So, barring a lottery win, I guess we'll keep going like this, because we're going to try to keep going. I mean, 11 years ain't nearly enough. I mean, I'm not even anywhere near Paul Harvey territory. In many ways about which I am happy to not be anywhere near Paul Harvey territory, but you get the idea. Hey, thanks for taking Ralph's up on her offer. We've got two new subscriptions that will be bumped this month by $11 a piece. Well, I mean they'll be bumped, and that challenge continues through Election Day, 11 days for the 11th anniversary of the Horn. Thank you, Ralphs, and thank you to our new subscribers. Note coming. Coming in from Tim from L.A. Tim said, I searched on Twitter for hashtag N-word. Only he looked for the word. Tim says, wow, Twitter's really on it. Yeah, not. So I tell you what, let's not let me filibobster away the entire 11th anniversary program. I'll open up the phone lines, 304-574-8178 or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, Bob Kincaid Horn from anywhere on the planet, or the stress line. Named after the immortal Bill Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-4676. I'm going to take just the briefest of breaks and we'll be back. For 11 years now, this is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid. Talking Heads, why not? 4 minutes past the hour. Thank you, Steve. Steve says, it's an honor to close the gap on the anniversary. Perfect timing. Yeah, oh, I couldn't agree more, Steve. Thank you very much. Let's see. It is 5 minutes past the hour, and let's check in over on the stress line and see what's on Jim in Louisiana Stan's mind. Hey, Jim. Wait a minute. Ah, rats. Okay. So, Jim, dig it. you're going to have to call back because the Bluetooth dropped again. The Bluetooth dropped again. Ugh. So, sorry about that, Jim. All right, that being the case, we'll pop over to the Skype line and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hi, Bob. Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. Thank you very kindly.
How the hell are you?
You know, I'm trying. You know, 11 years. It kind of, you know, it's kind of mind blowing a little bit.
It's so funny because I was trying to figure out when did I start listening, and it's been at least, you think, what, 5 years?
Every bit of it.
Okay, because I was like, I know.
Because I first met you in the post. It was like Friday on the post Malloy Friday night chat in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group.
Yeah, something. I actually, you know who told me about you? Brad Friedman.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Bless Brad's heart.
Because I listened to KPFK, which I'm not listening to now because it's doing the pledge drive, which drives me crazy. So, but a while ago, so he had a chat. He would have a chat room, and I, you know, talking to him, and I would call into the show a couple of times, and he said, "Have you asked me? Had I ever heard of Bob Kincaid?" I'm like, "No, I'm still, you know, very new to back then to, you know, progressive talk radio and this, you know," and I was hungry for it because I'm like, you know, I was listening to Rachel Maddow and still when Stephanie Miller had a show on out here and all that, but there was just something missing. And then, you know, I met, you know, found Brad Friedman by accident, and then he recommended that I, you know, and I went through chat room first. I didn't go on to the talk, you know, call, and I was talking to you in the chat room, and so I said, like, call in, and then a monster, I was born. So, so it's been at least 5 years. Had I had my brain surgery yet?
No. No. It was a good 2 years before that.
Okay, because that's not how I'm beginning to tell time. So, August was the 4 year anniversary of my brain surgery. So, that's right. So, we were talking before I had the brain surgery. So, it might have been 6 years then. So, wow. I was just like, because I was like, you know, going in my, you know, my little brain, you know, because I forget far more than I'll ever remember. So, you know, but it's just good that, you know, when I send you, you know, money on Skype, not Skype, but on PayPal,
yeah.
And I always get, you know, keep on pushing, you know, it has to be something with, you know, Curtis Mayfield. So, one of my favorite soundtracks is, and one of my actually favorite movies is Claudine with Diane Carroll and James Earl Jones.
Oh, yes.
And but the soundtrack, you got Gladys Knight in the Pits doing Curtis Mayfield. I mean, what are you going to, how can that be a masterpiece? How can it not be? I mean, I constantly listen to that soundtrack. And, you know, now that I'm older, you know, and I've watched the movie, I actually own the movie. Of course I do. And I watched it about a year or so ago. And it's so relevant even still today with, you know, the struggle that people, everyday people are trying to do, you know, what you got to do just to make ends meet. And, you know, and that's why when I think of Gladys Knight and the Pips, you know, I've really got to use my imagination, you know, just to make a career. To keep on keeping.
Well, I never knew you sang.
I was I singing? I'm sorry. <It's> like, I didn't even realize I started singing. That's like one of my favorite songs. I didn't scare people away, did I? Are people still?
No. I mean, you were like in key and everything. You know, something I can't do.
Oh, honey, it comes and goes. But when you have a favorite song, but because that song is my life, It's like, you know, you got to make a good reason to keep on keeping on. You have to make the best of a bad situation, you know, ever since. I mean, is that not our lives now? That song is like, I'm pretty sure it's damn near 40 years old. You know, has anything really changed?
Not much.
Okay. I mean, and then you think of good times, you know, keeping your head above water, making a way if you can, temporary layoffs, you know, easy credit ripoffs, struggling and surviving. I mean, yes, these were themes from a black center television show and a black movie, but it still fits today, and it fits every American, black, white, brown, or indifferent, that's going through that struggle. And, you know, it's one of those things when I think about, like, the people that you were, I got the past last half hour of your filibuster when you were talking about the anti-Semitic stuff and this hate-filled speech that people are so, you know, entrenched, well, it's my right to say these things. Yes, it's your right to say these things to a certain extent. You know, but when you're saying hateful shit, you better wait for the consequences.
Oh, when you live in privileged world, you can't have consequences because that would be an affront to your privilege. Speaking of privilege, you remember Miss White Privilege 2016?
Don't start with me with that bitch. I'm sorry, was I yelling? Listen. I'm trying to wish you happy birthday, and yes, I'm trying to interject a little bit of, you know, soul and stuff like that. Why are you gonna hush my high, man?
Oh no, because this is too good.
Oh goddamn you, Bob!
She's only 24 years old, Tracy.
She's a raving butt cake.
But she's only 24 years old, so she's never heard of the Clinton Chronicles. You know, the thoroughly discredited videotape that even Jerry Falwell had to denounce back in the 90s. The videotape that about all the bodies that keep piling up around the Clintons that just mysteriously die and the Clintons are out. And, you know, Limbaugh's. Well, she's decided she did an interview with Jamie Weinstein of the Daily Caller.
And
she said, you know, sometimes we look at patterns and we look at things that are happening, and sometimes you can't dismiss everything as a conspiracy. There's been some mysterious circumstances that have surrounded what we just saw at the DNC leaks. Then what happened to the DNC staffer who worked at the DNC that was in charge of that. And even after she gets called out on it, I don't know that he was killed by the Clinton or a Clinton hit person. I'm not going to sit here and be what you want me to be, which is a conspiracy theorist.
But aren't you being a conspiracy theorist?
Well, kind of, yes.
Okay.
But she's being very young, very blonde, and very 24, stupid. And very clueless, and you just know.
Bob,
you just know that there are porn threads over on Stormfront about her.
Where are you? What were you doing at the age of 24?
By the age of 24, let's see.
I know it's hard to think back that far, but come on.
By the age of 24, I had already become the youngest person ever to do a worldwide radio news broadcast.
Okay, and you had fact checkers and stuff like that, right? Before you.
Well, I mean, I just wouldn't have had a job if I had, you know, written what I really thought about Ronald Reagan, but, you know.
Right. I mean, see, now, I was at the age of 24, I had a 2-year-old son. Okay, Alex, I had him at 24, Alex was 2. And so I had a 2-year-old son. Here's the thing. I was 24. I was working at Ralph's Grocery Company part-time. But I have full medical benefits, Bob. When I took off time for me to have him, I had 2 months paid medical leave. But I got it extended because I hurt my knee and I had to have knee surgery. so I can have the surgery to after I had Alex. So I basically worked up until a week before I had him because, you know, single mom. And it was, you know, that's when I was skinny. And so then after I had him and 2 months after him, I had him, I had knee surgery and I was off of work for 11 months. Paid, Bob. I was actually making more at home.
The heady days of having a good union job in an America that had not been completely dismantled by the Republican Party quite yet.
Did I mention that there was that I actually had a union supplement?
Nice.
So I was getting disability.
Going to work every day, dealing with the world. You know, doing it in Southern California, and somehow or another you missed. But see, that's also before the internet. I mean, if you were 24 now, you could be like a famous right wing. No, you couldn't.
Bob, see,
because not because not blonde.
Not blonde. But here's the deal about me. You know, I grew up before I moved to South Central. I was slightly privileged. We had a nice house in West LA. You know, my mom and my stepfather worked. The nice home actually had a pool and everything.
Wait. You mean you didn't grow up in a living hell?
No. As a matter of fact, we moved from South Central to West LA when I was 5. And we lived there for like 8 years, which are my formative years. You know, by the time you turn 13, you're pretty much who you are going to be to a certain extent. But I was a little snooty, you know. I had the nerve to kind of look down on my relatives that live south of the 10 freeway, and you know I actually remember saying those people. And then reversal of fortune, we had to move to South Central, and now I'm surrounded by what? Those people. And yes, there were some hellish times. I mean, you know, we lived there during the middle of the the hyacinth of the crack wars. I mean, there was some duck and cover shit times. There was an alley that we lived behind or in front of whatever, that there was a couple of times that we found, you know, there were dead bodies. I never saw them, but my younger brothers and sisters did. But even with some members of my family lost to crack cocaine. But it wasn't a hell all of the time. I mean, yeah, when your mother's, you know, when your house is being firebombed by a Molotov cocktail, because why? Because your cousin and your aunt are using the product and still selling it, and they don't have shit, so they're going to take it out on my house, and my mom's car was a firebomb as well. But all that aside, we live in a nice neighborhood. You know, there was just some forces that wanted to... There were those forces that wanted to keep it in a certain way, and it was like, it was the kind of stuff that the media fed on, you know, because my mom owned her house. My mother was making now this is 1990s money. I used to do my mom's taxes. My mother was making $125,000 a year in the 90s because she was an RN. So we weren't struggling. I mean, like I said, there were times. I mean, before my mom got her nursing degree, I mean, my stepfather worked at Ralph's, not Ralph's, it turned into Ralph's and Boys Market, and he would bring home the cans without labels, and we had to shake those. I got so good to shake a can, I could tell you what was in it, like, ooh, you know, clean peaches or, you know, pineapple. I struggling and surviving, you know, making a way out of no way. But we did it. But for that motherfucker to say that, you know, all black people live in the inner cities and their lives are hell, fuck you. I posted a thing on my Facebook page, a meme about the Obama family, how they're the first family in 30 years to be scandal free. And, you know,
which is true. Last I checked, Michelle has not brought in a White House astrologer.
No, her daughters are driving around Washington D.C. drunk.
Oh no, I think Michelle's mama, you know, grandma.
Grandma Obama.
Well, not Grandma Obama, but Grandma Michelle's
grandma,
maiden.
Whatever Michelle's maiden name.
Yeah, I'm ashamed. I'm sorry. I don't know, but yeah, she
I don't
no,
know
she
it.
Does not
I
play
feel
that.
Horrible. Mm-mm. She does. You know, my friend of ours and I was just talking about this. She don't play that shit. You know, because she lives there. I'm pretty sure that Barack is terrified of that.
Boy, he don't get to have a cigarette anymore.
Okay. See what you know, and Michelle couldn't even break him of that, but I guess Grandma did. So it's like you know, here we go, and it, actually somebody had the nerve on my Facebook page because one of the parts of it says, and then you know, and then you know, most white Christians hate him, right? And so somebody wrote, I don't think this is true. That's all they wrote. So, you know, I lit into them. And not in an ugly way, but I'm like, you know, maybe I said, okay, so how is this not true? Can you tell me a scandal? Or better yet, I said, now maybe, you know, the meme saying most white Christians. So I said, that's a little
Well, strong. I mean, okay, now wait, Tracy, let's be fair. There has been a scandal.
Oh, what's the scandal?
Well, she's been on a relentless crusade to take away children's right to eat garbage every day for lunch.
Oh, right. Oh, and she had the nerve to go sleepless.
Yeah, don't forget the sleepless, yes. She has no respect for the institutions of this country. And don't forget she was never proud of America until Barack Obama became president. She hates America. Right.
She hates America. Right. Well, the latest one, I believe, Mike Pence.
But we do, but there's no getting around it. For 8 years, we've had a first lady who never ran over and killed anybody.
Who ran over and killed somebody?
Laura Bush.
Get the fuck, shut the fuck, what?
Oh, yeah, back, I think it was back before, before she and Dem Leader, got all hitched. But yeah, she ran over and killed her ex-boyfriend.
Oh, and it was an accident? How many times did she back up on him?
it was one of those skid mark free accidents, yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's nothing showing that she tried to stop.
Well, I'm, you know.
What is it? So it was the Republican version of Chappaquiddick?
No, I mean, it just couldn't be helped. I mean, you know, that like, just, you know, car wreck happens.
Ran over her ex-boyfriend. That doesn't sound like there was a problem with that. Shit. See, the fact is, and so when that person wrote, you know, I don't think this is true, but of course they didn't say why, so I asked.
And then as Asa Tyler. Points out, you forget the true scandal. Is that Barack Obama was not born in Merca, but yes,
right.
her maiden name was Robin. Robinson. Robinson.
Kenyan usurper.
Kenyan Muslim usurper.
Atheist Muslim.
Right. Yes.
You can't be an atheist.
Tyrant.
Muslim,
tyrant king.
He's a tyrant king.
You didn't get the memo.
You know, but see, here's the thing. Like I said, when that person said that, I said, you know, it might be maybe most Christians, that's white Christians. So I said, I'll take it down to some. I said, you know, that is a generalization. And I hate speaking in generalities, you know, kind of like the GOP president, the presidential nominee that says, you know, that all black people, you know, or you know, refers to black people as living in inner cities, and we're in hell, you know, and our lives are hell, rather. I said, excuse me for paraphrasing if I didn't get it, you know, quite right. However, you know, I live in Encino with my wife, and we're doing just fine. As a matter of fact, we're doing quite well. So I said, so that what I said was a gross generalization about, you know, all black people. And I said, so, you know, so blah, blah, blah. And, of course, I haven't heard from and plus, here's my favorite part. Remember that self-righteous Republican that I told you was always making,
yep.
I would post stuff about and always making comments? She has been eerily quiet lately, especially, she's been quiet for a while, but she got real quiet after the grab him by the pussy thing. Because you know I posted that shit, that stuff all over my Facebook page.
Oh, yeah?
You know, pussies against Trump, you know, pussy Ghazi, you can't grab this, you know, stuff like that. And so she has been eerily quiet, you know, because I think even she can't justify the crazy and the bullshit. But see, this is what I'm different from other people, especially when those people that, you know, take it upon themselves to, you know, criticize my postings or say shit on my Facebook page about what I post. I don't go to other people's Facebook pages to talk shit about them. Unless I really want, and if I really, really want to say something to them, I would do it in a private message. But then again, I don't care enough about other people's Facebook pages to give a damn about what they say. You know what I mean? Do you do that, Bob? With all the shit that people probably post on your Facebook pages and possibly on the Horn page, but they can't now because for some crazy reason, Betsy made me a moderator or whatever, an administrator. So every so often I get to approve postings on the, and thank you for that. I don't know if you guys.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, please wield the power carefully.
I'm very careful.
Don't let it go to your head.
But see, the thing is, it won't go to my head, seriously. But that's the thing. It's just the fact that we don't take time to do that, Bob, because we don't see the sense in it. We don't pick fights or go to other people's pages to pick fights. If they come to our page, we might say something, and if it gets stupid, we'll delete it because, you know, we can't. But it's like people get in so much trouble. We're having the same issue because there's some people having issues at our church. And instead of working it out between the person that you have an issue with and yourself, what do? They go on these Facebook rants. And I'm just like, remember what we did before Facebook? We actually talked to each other.
No, honestly, honest to God, I don't. I mean, I was thinking about the other night, Tracy, and I remember years and years and years ago now when a boyhood chum of mine said, dude, you're just going to have to, you know, we'd started the Horn and everything. But he said, dude, you're going to have to bite the bullet and get on MySpace. He said, the trick to MySpace is to realize that everybody there is 13 years old. And so I did. And wow, was that annoying. And then Rupert Murdoch bought it, and it died.
Yeah, and then hello Facebook.
And then Facebook. And you know, one, I don't put up with much right wingery on my Facebook page. None on the Horn page. My biggest challenge is keeping members, at least in the last few months, keeping members of the Horn community away from each other's throats.
And that has to be hard.
And I hope to hell, which is kind of a bad, crazy thing to, but anyway, that when this godforsaken election is over, that we can get back to the business of being progressive, focused on progressive things.
Exactly.
Because, a certain candidate who shall remain nameless will go, back into the weeds, and we won't hear from her again for another 4 years.
Until 2020.
And hopefully we can get some work done, because what most people don't realize, Tracy, is there is some shit out there coming at us. There's hope, for instance, that the Democrats will take the Senate in this election. Not much hope. I mean, I guess there's like maybe a Powerball ticket purchaser's chance of taking the House, but nothing much more than that.
Right.
But even if the Democrats take the Senate, one, they're not going to have the necessary 60-vote majority to overcome chinless Mitch McConnell. I mean, it's not a Senate rule or anything. It's just that's the way he operates. So they're not going to have that. But secondarily, come 2018 and the midterm elections, which never go well for incumbent or for sitting presidents,
Never.
Dig this.
Think about 2010.
No, wait. Get this. Think about 2018. You want a good scare. I mean, Halloween's coming up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
In 2018, 25 Democratic Senate seats are up for re-election.
25?
Only 9 Republicans are.
How did that happen?
I mean, it was just, you know, the Senate being a 6-year term doesn't roll the way that the House does. You know, the House is just every 2 years, da-da.
Okay.
And so you've got a chance. You've actually got a chance to literally clean house every 2 years. Realistically, it doesn't work that way. But in large part because of the gerrymandering and the voter suppression. But you've got a chance to turn the house every 2 years. With the terms in the Senate are staggered, and the way it works out, there are 25 up for re-election in 2018 who are Democrats and 9 who are Republicans. So that means that the Democrats are going to, but see, the thing is though, you know, assuming again, and I do this at my peril, that Hillary Clinton is reelected or is elected, assuming that Hillary Clinton is elected, then that gives us 2017 and 2000. Well, it gives us 2017 to get shit done to the extent that shit can be done at all with this Congress being the way it is. Because once again, in 2018, everything will shut down for the election process. And in the modern era, that's one of the flaws that's being, you know, broadly highlighted is there's two things I've been thinking about. One, the Senate itself, you know, every state gets 2 senators. You know, there are more cattle in Montana than there are human beings, but Montana's got 2 senators, just like California's got 2 senators. Right?
Right.
And the theory being that was going to be a body of equal representation, and then the House would be population-based.
Uh-huh.
So that some states could have more power than other states in the House, but everybody would be more or less equal in the Senate. Now, the question, and this is a civics question, and I think I'd love to hear what Dr. Bill has to say about it. But the Senate question, well, at the time that the framers put together the idea of a bicameral legislature with a House and a Senate, and they set it up the way they did, they needed to maintain some system in which to have one body where everybody was equal, you know, so that the more populous states couldn't just run roughshod, because, you know, the more populous states would run roughshod over the less populous states in the House, and they had to have. But why would you need that? Why would you need that level of so-called equality in the Senate?
Yeah, why do they have, like you said, bicameral?
Well, think back to 1787. Think about the 3/5 clause.
Oh, yes, lovely.
Now, the 3/5 clause...
That benefited the South, though.
Exactly. It allowed them to... And it, you know, because the South wanted to count every slave as a full, you know... And it was a compromise with the northern non-slave states saying, "Now, come on.
Yes, seriously, buddy."
And so they arrived at 3/5 for for census purposes, for population counting purposes.
But then again, it's still bullshit, because like 3/5 the person is still 3/5 more of a person than the northern states have. So you still have the southern states at a clear
right. But see, the only way they could get the Constitution ratified was if the South had some way of so-called protecting itself against the population dynamics that were distinctly in favor of the North, and it rolls down to us through history. So they then create the Senate, where everybody has an equal number of senators. In other words, the design of the Senate, even though the 3/5 clause is not in play, the design of the Senate was every bit as much based on slavery and mercantile interests as the House was. So here's my question. In 2016, Should every state actually have two senators? Should some states not have more than two senators? I mean, really? California is only good for two senators?
Texas, as much as I can't stand most of those people, you know, their politics. Like you said, Texas only has two senators?
Right. I mean, if we understand the necessity of it was to provide balance for the poor, aggrieved, slaveholding class of the South, then it was sort of mooted out by 1865, wasn't it?
Yep. Poor. Now you begin to sound like the people that are voting for Trump. Those poor, misunderstood, angry white people.
Yeah, right.
So aggrieved.
You know, aggrieved, like Tommy Lawrence, aggrieved. Ooh, see what I did there?
But see, here's the thing about that, you know, being aggrieved. You know, they're crying and whining about the jobs gone and all this and this, and they're believing that idiot Trump is going to bring jobs back. And as much as he talks about China, how much is his shit is made in China?
All of it. And so's Ivanka's shit. And by the way, you know, her brand is going to hell. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but Ivanka's. There are people out there saying, "Nope, sorry, Ivanka, no." And now everything that he used to plaster his name over, and Trump.
Gone.
Yeah, it's not Scion, SCION. And you know, if I was the car manufacturer, I'd sue.
Do they still make Scions? I don't think they still manufacture them.
Somebody owns the trademark.
Yeah, I would sue too. I would not want anything to do or my name, you know, because like you said, his name is going to shit. But then I tell people, and people are starting to rejoice and sing in the street, I'm like, don't get too happy. Still get your ass out there. Anybody from California, today's the last day to register, by the way. I know I don't need to tell my horn family members from California that shit. I got my vote by mail thing, my vote by mail packet the other day, and I'm still working with the propositions. Oh my God, with the propositions and all the measures and all of this, I will be, as a matter of fact, I'm going to do that. I meant to bring it today because I'm waiting for Will, but I left it at home. And so it's just mind boggling. But I love, you know, the fact that I can sit at home and study it and stuff. I mean, we have, like, I think 17 propositions. But what I'm loving is that our man, Bernie, was out here campaigning for Prop 61, and which is about, you know, how we talk about how the VA is the only government entity that can actually negotiate for drug prices and stuff like that. So Prop 61 will give California residents that are on Medicare, for Medicare and Medi-Cal, Medicaid or what have you, the same ability to negotiate like the veterans did. And you know how I know it's a great proposition? Not only because Bernie wants it, it's because companies like Merck and the other pharmaceuticals are running ads on No on 61. So you already know what I'm voting for, right?
Oh.
Like two years ago, I took a poli sci class, and like I said, the teacher was a great testament to what America is. He was from Vietnam. He was born in Vietnam. Him and his parents came over, you know, the boat people and stuff. They settled here. He grew up here. He became a citizen, and all this stuff. And he got his PhD and all this because he saw how important it was to know about the political process in this country. Because of that, the political process could directly affect his life. So he learned everything he could learn. And like I said, he finally got his PhD in poli sci. So the whole thing about politics fascinated him. And we were talking, it was election year. I think it was during the midterms. And we had a bunch of propositions, and somebody raised the question of, well, how do you know? I mean, because they're written in such gobbledygook and stuff like that. And he's like, you know what? I think I'm pretty sure I've told a story before. But he's like, scroll down to the very end of the proposition and read who the sponsor is. Because, you know, when we have our ballots, they'll have the no reason and the yes reason. And then, like I said, you scroll down to the bottom of the, and they'll say who the people who wrote it, who's funding it. And if the people who are funding the proposition is somebody that you would, like if it's a tobacco company or the alcohol companies or what, you know, whatever the case may be. And if these are people that you cannot see yourself supporting or that you know are only voting, putting money in this initiative to defeat it or for it because it'll benefit them, then you know what to vote for. Because he's like, you know, these things are written so people don't understand them. What about where you live? Is it the same thing?
Hey, well, I mean, we don't have the referendum and recall process.
You don't have like state and county measures and stuff like that?
No. I mean, once in a while, we'll be allowed to vote on whether or not we're going to have gambling in a given county.
But let the people
decide whether pot would be legal.
Well, I understand that because
I mean, let me back up. In West, see, referendum and recall is one of those things that developed as the country moved westward. You know, it was supposed to be a democracy thing. And sometimes it is. You know, as long as the money doesn't ruin it. But the only time we get to vote on a given question is if the legislature decides to amend the Constitution of the state.
Really? So you guys don't get these measures, you know, like there's a couple of measures about, you know, building roads and a couple of measures for bonds.
No, I mean, we vote on locally on a county basis. We'll vote on bond levies and things like that. For the schools, for libraries, fire departments, things like that. For instance, a couple of years ago, the people of, say, Roan County, West Virginia, turned down a bond levy that was going to be used to make sure that every child in Roan County could have free lunch at school. They said, oh, hell no.
And people wonder why I had a conversation with my mom earlier today because, you know, she lives in North Carolina. And so she was telling me how much she pays for her drugs, you know, because she finally admitted I'm getting older and I have pain. And I'm like, thank you. It's like, because you all laid up hurting and shit when you have, you know, can get prescriptions. Now, she listed all the stuff that she's taking, which a lot of it mirrors what I'm taking at the time, right? My total cost for my prescriptions, typically, my Flexeril was $10 because it wasn't covered, but even still $10. My hydrocodone was zero. My Flexeril, you know, all this stuff I don't pay for. So the typically when I go to pick up my prescriptions, I'm usually paying at the most maybe $20, and that's for everything. And most of the time, my prescriptions are covered. So basically, so when she told me what she used to pay for the exact same prescription, $70.
There you go.
Because why? They don't have the
they don't have the Medicaid expansion.
Exactly.
You know, and for instance. That's one of the things, you know, for the, you know, Hillary's a fucking criminal left. She's proposed moving Medicare eligibility down to age 55.
Down to 55?
Hillary.
Hillary?
Yeah.
So basically, if I wasn't on Medicare right now, I would only have to wait 5 more years? Just shut the front door.
Well, but of course, this is predicated upon a responsible Congress, which, you know.
Well, we've already had the turtle basically, and you know, Citizen McCain saying, well, this is a question that's been burning in my brain ever since they made that announcement, they can really get away with that shit. How is that not illegal? How is that not impeachable? Because they're saying that they're not going to do their jobs. What the fuck? How do they get away with that shit? And I know it's a civics lesson, and I'm pretty sure you've probably said how they could get away with it. But really, me this, Batman, help a sister out. How the fuck can they get away with this shit?
Well, I mean, but you know the answer, right? Hey, Tracy, thanks for jumping in on this birthday party night. Go somewhere and find some good cake and ice cream, because I'm sure there's it's got to be near.
Well, actually,
it's got to be nearer to you than it is to us.
I had, in your honor, I actually, while I was listening to your Philip Opster, and I meant to tell you this, I was having a mini vanilla frosty in your honor. Because
vanilla, because Bob. Yeah.
Because it's vanilla, because it's Bob. And one quick happy birthday again. You know, I'm going to have to do it black style, so hold on. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, happy birthday to ya. Happy birthday to ya. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Bob.
Well, thank you, Tracy. This is the part after you did that, the for-profit media documentarian would say, Tracy was raised in the black church. Yeah. Just like Aretha Franklin.
I wish I could sing like Aretha.
Don't we all?
Okay. All right, my dear. Well, you enjoy, have a great rest of the show. And like I said, happy birthday and many, many more to come.
Thank you very kindly, Tracy. You have a lovely evening and be careful going home on the 6 and 7 8s. It's hell out there.
All right, my love. Take care.
Tracy, the lady cab driver, calling from the Los Angeles area. Thank you very kindly to Keith for jumping in. Much appreciated. Much appreciated indeed. Thank you, Keith. And thank you, Randy. Randy took a big bite out of the anniversary fundraising. And that is much, much appreciated. There's, well, 11 years. Y'all, that's why. Thank you, Randy. Thank you very much. And a note coming in. I mentioned those people that have been listening from the very beginning. I still don't know how David in South Carolina, Stan, even found us. Because we started streaming back in 2004 at a time when weren't that easy to find. Or maybe there just weren't that many of us. But David in South Carolina, Stan, has been with us, part of the family, since, you know, pretty much the very beginning. Subject line, congratulations. David says, way too much stuff to crawl back through. This show certainly has been and continues to be a steady touchstone in my life. I swear that some fraction of the reason my daughter is studying at Princeton on full scholarship is because she knew from listening to the horn and from me talking that it was indeed possible for her to get into an Ivy. I first heard your show when you were still on traditional radio and have been around for all transitions since. There are just not that many people that get the Southern thing. There are a few of us, of course, drive-by truckers and other like-minded artists in the South. Don't leave out Jason Isbell. I could go on forever. I do hope to get up your way. I have so much still to do with probate and all that. However, once it's settled from my mom's, I want to do some music playing in small venues. It'll be something quite small, and I want to find a simple little home studio just to get my original stuff recorded so it can be passed down to my girls and grandkids. I do want to get out and travel and meet some folks in person that I've only heard online. Point is that the horn has helped sustain me emotionally through all these losses I've experienced over the last few years. Most of all, we are family. And indeed we are. Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure to correspond and converse with you over the years. All 11 of them. Well, 12, really. 13, I think. maybe 13 in February. Yeah, the program's almost over. My ability to cipher is severely compromised. In regard to med prices, Robert in Australia points out, my meds are currently free. All my prescriptions are currently free as I've gone over my limit for the year. I'm only allowed to pay so much per year for drugs. Wait a minute. I'm only allowed to pay so much per year for drugs. Wow. It all resets on January 1, 2017. Someday, you know, if we can keep our together and actually push that idea forward. That's one of those places where, you know, progressive action really does matter. A lot. Okay. One more little agonizing thing for Moran Monday. I nominate the legislature of the state of Alabama. You know that I go and read my hometown news every week. I just like to keep a hand in. They just got done having their Renaissance Fair. Yeah. But in the same online issue, I read the September indictments report. And, I mean, just to give you an idea, let's see. Okay, there's a thief. All right. Okay, so can't bitch about that. Second-degree assault, resisting arrest, and attempting to elude law enforcement. Oh, how about attempting to commit a controlled substance crime? Attempting to commit a controlled substance crime, obstructing justice by giving false identification to law enforcement, unlawful possession of drug paraphernalia, and resisting arrest. Unlawful possession of drug paraphernalia. Well, well, well. And that gets you a felony in Alabama? Nice. Okay, so here's a guy who rips off the elderly. Good. Okay, put him under the jail. That's fine. Unlawful possession of a controlled substance. Unlawful possession of drug paraphernalia. Yada, yada. Okay, there's a burglar. Unlawful possession of a controlled substance. Unlawful possession of drug paraphernalia. And apparently in Alabama, they have a crime called second-degree marijuana. That's just what it's, you know. It's a ton. Here's another second-degree marijuana. Second-degree marijuana. Second-degree marijuana. You know, we're making criminals out of people who aren't criminals. And they're particularly vicious about it in Alabama because the lead story to this was that three women were indicted in the September term of the circuit court for a crime called chemical endangerment of a child. Now, I went and I looked up the statute. A responsible person commits the crime of chemical endangerment of exposing a child to an environment in which he or she does any of the following. Knowingly, recklessly, or intentionally causes or permits a child to be exposed to or ingest or inhale or to have contact with a controlled substance, chemical substance, drug paraphernalia, blah, blah, blah. Violates and child suffers serious physical injury. Violate subdivision 1 and the exposure, ingestion, inhalation, or contact results in the death of the child. The court shall impose punishment, blah, blah, blah. It's an affirmative defense that a physician provided a lawful prescription. Well, isn't that liberal of the Alabama legislature? Three women have been indicted after they tested positive for drugs while they were pregnant. One woman, age 20, was indicted for chemical endangerment of a child because she tested positive for pot. The other two women were indicted for chemical endangerment of a child because coke and meth. All of the children were fetuses. Sis. The woman was arrested February 15th after she tested positive for marijuana when she was 7 months pregnant. She will be arraigned on the charge by yada, yada, yada on October 28th. Till then, you know, she's in the hoosegow. She was 7 months pregnant in February, which means she was 9 months pregnant in April, which means she ain't pregnant anymore. And the baby was born, and the baby's healthy. The baby has no symptoms. But by God, they're gonna grind her. Because family values. It's never quite made it to the Supreme Court, oddly enough. But none of these women were indicted for, drinking a six-pack of Old Milwaukee Light or smoking a pack of Marlboro Reds, both of which are really, really bad for the precious little fetuses. But the 20-year-old is sitting in a room on a Friday night, 6 months pregnant, and somebody goes, "Here." And before she even thinks, she goes, "Here." Then she's going to do time. She's been indicted for a fucking felony. What happens in a state that has medical marijuana? Ah, see, that's why there's not going to be medical marijuana in a place like Talabama, because the precious guardians of the sweet little adorable little fetuses will lose an opportunity to grind their goddamn white wing, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered boots into the face of, you know, some poor woman. Or, you know, reach their small government hands up the, you know, because they got handles. You can grab them there. Oh, but they gonna vote for Trump! And they don't perceive the hypocrisy not one iota. So it's time to get out of here. Thank you very much for joining in on a right fun little birthday evening here at the Horn. Onward through year 12, I say. Do you say? I hope you say. Thanks to everybody over the course of 11 and more years who've made all of this happen. None of it ever would have happened without Ben Birch. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room, and all of our other chat room moderators. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox, who, with his patient counsel, has helped to keep me technically sane and kept this all on the air for many years. Thank you, Peter Godbold, for teaching me to build a computer way back in a drop dead panic. Thank you, Peter. We love you very much. There are too many people to mention, too many names to name, too many people to thank. Thank each and every one of you who've ever given anything to keep this going, because it is what has kept this going. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of all of our hearts. If Agnes was back here, she'd thank you too. I'll do it for her. And yes, always, 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 the group that changed my life, Cold River Mountain Watch, thank you. And Gina, always, 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 it's all for you. Good night, y'all.